Welcome to the Canadian Tech Podcast for Monday, September the 24th, 2012. My name is Stuart Clark.
I'm John Pylon.
And I'm Jameson Roberts.
Well, gentlemen, looks like fall has truly arrived, my most favorite season of the year. A little bit cold. For those of you who are up actually really early this morning, there was frost on the roofs. There was.
Really?
Yeah, it was
really?
Pretty cold. I actually sent a tweet out last night. I was up late and my weather station was saying it was down to like 2 degrees. And there wasn't much wind, so yep, I am not surprised. It's unfortunate for some people, but yeah, there we go.
It's certainly nice to walk down the streets and not have sweat trickle down your back. So
I like exactly. A jacket and a sweater around this time of year. Mm-hmm. It's nice.
Yep, exactly. People start getting their winter clothes out, fall clothes, stuff like that, and things like that. So
and tech news starts again. No more
tech
August
news.
Drills.
Amazing tech news starts again. So I think what we're going to do is we're actually going to start with the iPhone 5, I think, gentlemen. iPhone 5 was released. Our own Mr. John Pylon braved the lines, not really.
Yeah, I waited with one person in front of me at around 9:15 a.m.
Right.
I walked
okay.
in there and it was open. Went, grabbed it, and it took longer to actually get the phone and go through all the contracts.
Yeah,
stuff.
That's
and getting
what
them
I
to
find.
Call in and do all that stuff than it did actually waiting in line. That
really?
Was good.
Okay, so you are now the proud owner. We have it here in studio. We've all had it in our hands. It is truly lighter than the 4S.
It's, yeah. I think a lot of the criticism of everyone, like, oh, the iPhone 5 is boring, it's nothing really new, comes from... I don't know, kind of like a gadget addiction for people. Mm-hmm. People are like, they want like a bigger hit each time. They want it to be like, oh, I want it to be mind-blowing like when the iPhone first came out and all those things. So this one's more of a iterative design change. It's just better. It's not like it's going to be groundbreaking. It's just
right.
better. And there's a lot of groundbreaking things inside mm-hmm. is the big difference. Like mm-hmm. the ASIC system on a chip is extremely fast. The fact that it's thinner and has... better screen, better battery life, better speeds, all of those things. And it's thinner and bigger and lighter is kind of a design miracle, I would say. But
well, and that's the thing and the one thing that I really find compelling, like I've got a 4S and I have no desire halfway through my contract to upgrade. I usually wait until my contract's nearly up. The one thing I do like is the idea of that extra row of icons, because I do find, I do use some folders, but I like having all the stuff I use all the time on that first page.
Yep.
And right now I'm three icons over. So
I find even the extra row of icons isn't really where I feel it at all. The real time that I feel the big screen is in any app that requires reading. So like my RSS feed reader, which
right.
I use all the time, it's a lot more comfortable when you just have those extra three or four lines of text
right.
for reading and for videos, because
okay.
it does fill the whole screen.
It does fill the
full
whole screen
16:9.
I was going to ask, what RSS reader do you use?
Reader.
You just use the built-in mm-hmm. Google Reader?
No, Reader. It's called
Reader.
R-E-E-D-E-R.
Right, that's right. Okay, that's
yeah,
the
it's,
one.
It's really good.
And the other thing I like is, even though a lot of people complain about the new connector, I like the fact that you can plug it in both ways.
And yep. also, the fact is originally I was a little bit being like, that kind of sucks. And then I actually saw this thing.
Yeah.
It is remarkably small.
It
yeah,
is.
It's not
it's
just
very
like
tiny,
it's
yeah.
not like just oh, it's smaller. Like they saved a lot of space. Like it feels like it's smaller than a micro USB.
Right. Now, was there something I heard about something about the podcast, the iPod? There's something about a cable not working.
Yeah, the iPod controls don't work on some devices.
Right.
Through the 30-pin adapter.
Okay.
So if you're using the 30-pin adapter with the lightning cable, it won't do some of the controls that you could get, like when you send it to a car and how the car would then have the controls. Through Bluetooth and stuff, it still
okay.
works like that.
For Bluetooth, okay.
And it also
cable.
Doesn't do video out. So you can't plug in lightning to 30-pin to HDMI.
Okay.
But Apple said that within the next few weeks there'll be HDMI adapters, VGA
but
adapters coming
also,
in for Lightning.
Also, aren't they trying to push towards AirPlay for that type of stuff
exactly.
anyways?
They're trying to
yeah.
do a lot of Bluetooth.
Yeah,
like
and
wireless.
It makes sense for a lot of like stuff like that. It makes a lot of sense. So, but overall you're pleased
it's
with
definitely,
it?
Yeah, I've used all the iPhones since the very first one and mm-hmm. this is by far the best one. Obviously, it should be since it's
right.
but I don't feel like I've downgraded at all on the
okay.
hardware itself. And the software iOS 6 is fantastic. I have almost no complaints with it.
Now, which model did you get? You got the black?
I got black 32 gigs. Okay, yeah. I was reading a couple articles about the, I think they were trying to call it Scratchgate.
Yeah, you were mentioning that before we started.
I don't know exactly where, if you Google Scratchgate, you'll see a bunch of the stories about it. But basically somebody brought it out and took like a knife to it or an X-Acto blade. I can't remember exactly what it was. And like, oh, look, it gouges. And then
Of course it will.
I was watching Leo Laporte on air and he took a tack or something to it and it didn't scratch at all. There was a little scuff I made, but he wiped it away and it was fine.
You know, it's funny so the it's amount like, of time we spend obsessing over these things.
And I think there's also a big case of people wanting to kind of stick it to Apple because A, it's popular and B, it's going to make you money if you're writing about it. If you're like, oh, look, Apple made a huge mistake, and then everybody's going to read it and jump on that.
And we've talked about how the tech journalism's, you know, we're all over these rumors, and no matter what, it's quite a bit of hype. I know a while back on Leo Laporte's This Week in Tech show, they talked about, and they drew a lot of comparisons between tech journalism and, you know, people with, like, behind Hello Magazine and TMZ and stuff like that. There's a lot of that. It's, you know, and a lot of people don't want to admit that, but it's certainly there.
The celebrity news for guys.
Yeah. Well, for techies. We'll say guys.
Well, okay. the thing is that stuff...
That was Jameson, ladies? I just so you guys know.
And the thing is, though, it trickles over to mainstream, though, because everybody wrote a story. Every newspaper you could have read had a story with the iPhone 5. So.
The funniest bit I thought was the Fox News affiliate in New York City, which totally got it wrong. They basically thought it had, you know, holographic and lasers.
Laser keyboard with a holographic projector
don't
display.
Don't get me wrong. I would love to have a built-in laser keyboard, but I don't expect to see that at least for a couple of generations.
Yay, fact-checking.
Yes, exactly. Oh, well, again, in the quest to be first out and, you know, rushing away and things.
But
so.
To be fair, also take a look at the commercials that Samsung have come out. Like, there's the one where they, the clip that sticks in my mind is the guy in line, he's saying, they took the headphone jack and they put it on the bottom. I'm like... Yeah, okay, I get it. You're trying to make a point that Apple's, you know, it's...
And I think, as we talked about last week, we're going to see more and more of that, especially now that, you know, they're fighting it out in court in the
But it does
court
make
of public
so
opinion.
Much more sense to have the headphone jack on the bottom. It really does. Because when you have the phone and you put it in your pocket, to when it was on top, you would turn it, and then when you pull it out again, you grab it from the top, and then the phone's upside down, so you'd have to turn it around. No, it just pulls it.
Joining us today is Apple spokesman John Pylon.
It just makes more sense. That was actually that has always been one of my complaints about the iPhone is that the headphone jacks on the top makes no sense because if you have headphones in and you're taking a picture, it drapes across the screen. It was always in the way.
Okay.
Well, and from the standpoint of not wanting to drop it, it does make a lot of sense.
Yeah, no, exactly. But no, I must admit, I'm very impressed with how genuinely light it is. I was very impressed
that
when I
thing
had that.
Is, Okay. Stunningly light.
The other thing that happened on iPhone launch day, and again, this is very similar to what happened last year, BlackBerry, not as major, at least up to us in North America, but in Europe and Asia and whatnot, they had an outage again. Big mail outlet outage on iPhone launch day. Now, of course, the tin hat side of me says, conspiracy?
What conspiracy?
You know, who knows?
That Apple hacked them?
That's it. See, you admit it. No, it's just it's kind of ironic. That's all. Like, you don't really need to be, you know, you always say you want to get some press, but that's not the kind of press they want.
I just don't think
they knew it was the only thing that was going to grab the headlines away from the iPhone launch.
I honestly didn't even hear about it for a couple of days after.
Well,
because
Apple had the story thing. But
I think actually, which is probably a good thing for BlackBerry.
Well, the best thing is, they managed to, unlike last year when it affected everyone for several days. This one, they had it, you know, got it solved in a couple of hours. But, you know, the stock is still, it's still dropping. It's down below 6.18 on the close today. You know, they're just going to have to buy their time. But, you know, as we've heard from some of our colleagues who have been able to see it, BB10, but, you know, more and more. This is, you know, and I believe RIM has its quarterly earnings call this week, so I don't think you're going to be seeing too much from there because they're basically going to have to batten it down because they're going to be having a lot of its competitors buying smartphones between now and Christmas for the Christmas rush, and they're just going to have to hope some people are left to buy their product. And again, I really hope they succeed. I think, you know, competition's healthy.
I kind of hope they don't succeed and they get bought out and somebody buys them and makes them better.
I think that would be awesome. If they could stay in Canada, it'd be even better.
And I don't think it'd be worthwhile for them to move the RIM headquarters of something like that. Like if, say, Dell or some company or Samsung bought them, they would probably keep the, because they've got a lot of bases here in Waterloo. It's a good hold to have.
I suppose, but it all depends what the company's buying them for. They're buying for the patents. It's a different story.
Yeah, but their patent portfolio is good, but it's not worth a company. Unless they can get it dirt cheap,
They might split the company.
I can see them splitting the hardware and the security side, which would be fine. Also, IBM taking the enterprise solutions,
and that's what people far smarter than us are basically saying they're going to.
Their software has always been their bread and butter, anyways. So
exactly. No, it's always been the keyboard.
It's been the keyboard for a long time. True, so it'll be interesting to see. Jameson, any other comments on that or?
No, I think we've got it all. It's, you know, I hate to sound that way, but, you know, it's not a whole lot of good news coming out of RIM these days, other than, you know, the prospect of BB10 being this mind-blowing thing like the iPhone when it originally came out.
Right.
If they can do it, they can do it. If they can't, well.
They can. Okay, just kind of related to BlackBerry and Research for Motion in Waterloo. One of the founders, Mike Lazarus, is they're going to be opening a new quantum nano center at the University of Waterloo. And he's basically, they want to make this kind of similar to what the old Bell Labs in New Jersey's was. Again, you know, we're here in the Research Park at Western. I think this is a fabulous idea. Mm-hmm. We need to, have more research here in Canada. So I think it's definitely a good idea. Was built with $100 million of his money. So
as long as no hockey teams pop up in the next future that can possibly move to Hamilton, it should be good until he forgets about the entire thing. And then,
They're all on strike, I don't think we're going to have to worry about that.
At least
for a while.
This year.
Yeah, exactly.
It's funny that it's called quantum nano. Could you think of a nerdier thing to call it? Like, a quantum nano physicist.
Quantum computing is a big thing.
But quantum nano, it's just funny words.
Yeah, but, you can thank quantum and nano. You can thank nanotechnology in some ways for some reason why your phone's so small.
I agree. It's just funny words saying that. It's like,
I know, quantum mechanics, quantum physics. I know, it's something like out of a sci-fi movie. I think that's a very, very good thing. It's a very good thing for Waterloo if it helps get some researchers, to stay. Maybe there's a home for some ex-RIM employees.
Well, and it will probably have a trickle down into the surrounding areas. I mean, anything that happens in Waterloo is good for Toronto. It's good for London.
It's good for the economy in general. Yeah.
Exactly. Especially when we're looking at Ontario being right now sort of second cousin to out west with all of the export-based economic development that's happening. Mm-hmm. So.
Mm-hmm. So we have to hope, so hopefully we'll see. We'll see what happens. We wish them good luck. That ought to be interesting to see.
And hopefully we'll get some news quickly out of there on some groundbreaking products or projects, I should say.
Yeah. And they've always been, both the founders have always been really good to Waterloo. They invested quite a bit of money. There's the Perimeter Institute up there. I don't know if either of you have ever been there, but it's a beautiful building, and they do a lecture series. My father-in-law goes to some of the lectures. My father-in-law goes to some. I had to think about that for a second. Goes to some of the lectures they make available to the public for free, and they're quite good. So yeah, it's an interesting one as well. So okay, this article I've kind of found.
I think you skipped a little big news story, the biggest story of the week.
The map apps?
I think the map apps is probably something that should be talked about
on
before
iOS
we move
6.
Off of well, the we, iOS 6.
I know, but you were arguing against that. So.
I know, but I think it's worth
all right. Well, what the argument. Well, we'll certainly go back. For you, John, we will go back.
Round one.
Round one. Ding. The map app sucks, John.
I think, a lot of people have been saying the map app sucks, and I'm not going to disagree with them at all. The map app, Google map app, the original map app sucked. The map app still sucks, just in different ways from the Google map. Sucking
satellite
view is terrible. Well, in London it's of clouds. In the more populous areas they've got better stuff, but London, nobody cares about London from the rest of the world. I'm saying it, nobody cares. But Toronto's got a great view. Vancouver's got great stuff. Ottawa's got stuff.
The 3D view is great.
The satellite view sucks. Turn-by-turn directions are great. I haven't personally, in anywhere that I've searched, found these bugs. Like they said, I think it was like 98% of directions are correct. There's like 2% of people may find an incorrect
spot. And you know what? It's the same rule you follow when you follow a GPS. Yeah. If it tells you to drive off the bridge, don't drive off the bridge.
Yeah, don't drive off a bridge. Yeah. Like, I think a lot of it was a bit overblown. I will admit the satellite view is terrible, but I never turned it on Google Maps anyways because that doesn't help me navigate.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I think it's not a terrible update, and I think also a lot of people are missing why they switched to their own mapping service.
Oh, yeah,
too.
I know. Like, and that's the thing a lot of people don't realize. The other thing, actually, if we're going to talk about that, the other thing is, which I found rather hilarious, is it does use Yelp for part of the Siri location. So you can ask Siri, you know, where the nearest Chinese restaurant and coffee place is. I asked when I got the update for my 4S, I asked for the nearest Starbucks, and it correctly mapped all those. I asked for the nearest Tim Hortons, and it had some issues. The most funniest part were two. I asked for the nearest McDonald's, and it indicated to me the nearest McDonald's was in Port Huron, Michigan.
Which it still does.
Yeah. Okay. And the nearest bookstore, I asked for bookstores in the area, and two of the entries were bookstores that closed, but one in particular is one that's been closed for 8 years. So I thought that was odd. So I went to Yelp.com or Yelp.ca, and the data is much more accurate there, which tells me they're not tied to the same back end. So I'm hoping we're going to see some corrections with that fairly soon. Because if I was a merchant, I'd be kind of annoyed right now.
Maybe Apple forgot. I mean, take a look at the issues with Wi-Fi on the first day where a page was down, and so it was throwing errors.
It was throwing errors, and everyone thought it was something to do with the upgrade. Yeah,
it could be just something on Apple's end. They haven't dotted their I's and crossed their T's and hooked something up.
Actually, I think a lot of it is Yelp's fault because Yelp in Canada is not really
but again, I went to Yelp.ca.
Right, but
the information there was completely different.
Yeah, because they're giving Apple a different subset than their full database.
But that doesn't make sense.
Because they're going to be making. Because the same reason why they moved off of Google. Google was going to be putting ads in the maps. Mm-hmm. Therefore, Google would be making money off of Apple. So then they went to Yelp. Yelp is making money from Apple. Apple is paying Yelp, I believe, or Yelp, I can't remember which way it is, to get access to this. So they're giving them, based on how much they give, a different subset of data.
The problem is, though, if you've got a subset of data that impacts on the consumer experience that's incorrect and causes frustration, that affects both brands.
Oh, exactly.
And they need to address that.
But again, it's one of those things. It's probably there's reasons why they can't use this data because of privacy issues. They can't release this to this to the third party yet. And then this.
Well, again,
this
we're going to have to see. I haven't really seen a good explanation for that yet.
I imagine it's an API issue.
I'm hoping we will. I was very surprised, though, when I went to Yelp on my normal Mac, and the data was much more
because
accurate.
If you look up the ones from even in more populous areas where the Yelp, there's 20, 30 times more Yelp reviews. In London, like most of the places you'll go to, if you do find it on Yelp, there's one review.
Yep.
And one person has done it. So it's not quite accurate because one person did it. They don't have any data backing it up or saying anything like that. So
But you think a major chain like McDonald's or something, you think
the McDonald's one is probably, well, if they didn't give them any of their Canadian data.
Yeah. They might always...
Well, but see again, it's kind of strange, and that's where again they're it's affecting the
probably
user
the CRTC
experience.
Fault.
The CRTC.
I blame the CRTC for it. It's gotta be.
Is it always the CRTC's fault?
Always the CRTC's fault.
You know, just
they took away my Pandora, so they're dead to me.
Now I do have a question for you, and I want to regarding the maps, and I want to break it down. Is it like a lot of what we're saying is that it's all the data's fault from the standpoint of it, the application itself and the features and things like that, you know, regardless of what the data is it a positive shift them shifting the application the way they have?
I like it a lot more. It's a lot prettier and it's easier to view. The colors are good. It's less convoluted, I found, than the Google Maps. It's clean. I think it looks better.
Yeah.
But
so all in all,
that could be because there's less data in it too.
That's also a valid point. But you know, just from the standpoint of it being, you know,
it looks
the
a lot more Apple.
The data.
It looks more Apple-y than the old one did.
Yeah,
and I guess one of the other complaints from people is, particularly in major metropolitan area, it doesn't have the transit data, the Apple Maps anymore.
But that's a different one too, because I was in Toronto and then we tested it out, and I went to hit the bus icon, and then it says download one of these apps. So I downloaded the app.
So it's an app. It's not integrated in with the map.
It is integrated in with the map. Okay. So the way the API works, I can show it up. I'll pull it up right now. You won't be able to see it on the audio, obviously. But obviously, if I go to Maps, and let's say I'm in Toronto.
Yeah, don't put London Transit in there. I guarantee
no,
you.
Oh, yeah.
I'll find it.
It'll never be up. Okay, so CN Tower to dropped pin. So I have a drop pin in Bryn Mawr Street. I want to go start. Oh, no, I don't want that direction.
Still okay, got there
we go. Where were you when you were in Toronto?
CN Tower to drop. Oh, stupid.
He's trying different things.
I hit the wrong way.
You hit the wrong
so
way.
So if I hit the bus and I go from CN Tower to this drop pin, it asks me what app I want to use. So it pops up. So I've downloaded this one called Transit.
Okay.
I hit route. It opens it up using the maps. And then it's saying unsupported region because I'm in London right now and it's not supported. But if I close that out, it will change to tell me the times the bus comes.
All right, so there is. So, okay. So it's getting.
It's
there.
Integrated into there. It's
okay,
just,
so it's
but
getting
that's,
there.
But that's also on the onus of. I mean, obviously, it's any of them are going to be in the onus of yeah. the transit system.
But somebody needs exactly. to put London, Ontario's transit system somewhere.
John Pylon.
Somebody with any development skills needs to put. They would make. I would pay $5 for that right now.
There is. You go. There is an app, but it just scrapes data off.
It
of
just scrapes
the,
it off yeah. of like PDFs and.
Well, I know, and that's because there hasn't really been a lot of
LTC
data.
Needs to release the GPS data.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if LTC knows how to release the GPS data.
I don't think they even use it, but.
Well, you know, also, as long as the GPS receivers aren't in the bus shelters.
Yeah.
I also have a pile of money sitting on a table at home right now for the first company to make a lightning dock. So like a charging dock.
Okay,
I have money
first.
To throw at them. I don't care what it looks like. I don't care. If it has a clock and plays music, that's great. I just want something that I can set when I get home, set my phone on to charge it.
I think you're going to be seeing it soon. I know.
I imagine it'll be a yep. couple of weeks.
Yeah.
But the first ones out there, they're getting money thrown at them.
Okay.
I'm sure
right,
we could come up with
here
something
first.
Here
in
the
print
lab.
It on the 3D printer. Yeah, I'm sure.
Oh,
that the check Thingiverse. We just
I could just take the USB
going.
Cable. And
yeah.
There you go. See the little ladies and gentlemen, those of you who are not watching at home, the light bulb has now gone off.
So clearly you owe me some money for that idea, John.
Mr. Pylon's
you didn't
head.
Make it.
He came
no,
up
but
with
I came
up
with the idea.
No.
All right.
What is this, Kickstarter?
Yes.
Why not? All right, moving on. Story in the Globe and Mail. Advertisers warm to Canadians' ravenous consumption of online video. There's one thing we Canadians do well. It's watch
use
a
the
lot
internet.
Of videos.
Oh, I'm sorry. We're the great white north where we have where we ride polar bears and live in,
well,
in,
exactly.
in igloos.
Actually,
but apparently we do. We do consume a lot of YouTube
and
content.
Actually one of the reasons for the online video, not in this study, it was in another one last year, I believe, is because of our winters. Because
really?
Yeah, because a lot of the time, if it's a blustery, wintery day, what
we're
are you doing?
Inside.
You stay inside.
We stay
versus
inside.
If you live in San Francisco, it's very rare that you have a blustery, wintery day and you don't stay in, so you can go out and do stuff.
Or exactly. at least go down to the nearest Starbucks and have a latte.
Exactly. But well, there's lots of things like that where it's
yeah.
Canadians on... Typical have
but I think this is what's also showing. The advertisers are realizing now they can really target specific
but
things.
We still have the worst broadband internet in the world.
I know. Well, that's a whole other story. So
it's funny that there's this disconnect between the telecoms and the advertising.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we want tons of money yep. in Canada, but they're going to use their entire bandwidth cap on advertising.
The thing I love about this this particular story is, you know, and again, it shows how well they can target things. So this particular story mentions a campaign for a BMW luxury car. And I quote, in the case of BMW's most recent campaign, the target was men 45 to 64, I'm in that, with household income above $300,000, nope, with an interest in architecture and design and who keep abreast of fashion. My wife and I may argue on that. And then they say the software determined it would influence roughly half that group with online video, and that came second to only magazine inserts. Television ads were determined to influence half that many, and banner ads would influence only 5%. And this is what they're looking at now. They're realizing online's another channel.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to play second banana. In this case, they knew they'd be wasting their money with TV. So
does this mean we'll actually get decent advertising
as long
quantity
as we don't, as
on,
long as we don't
on,
block it with our ad blockers?
Well, yeah, that's true.
You know, which is a whole other ball of wax. But no, there's actually been some pretty good ads coming out. You know, they're getting more and more creative because they're, you know, they have to. People are more sophisticated. They're going to, you know, they're basically going to turn them off and, you know, and just ignore them unless it's interesting mm-hmm. to watch. It's the same thing. It's amazing how we always watch the Super Bowl for the ads because the ads are that good.
Who cares about the football? Maybe
yeah,
the cheerleaders, but
occasionally a game breaks out. You're about to get married. You can't say that anymore.
Yeah, I got just a couple saying. More months.
Yeah, I don't know. depends if she's listening or not.
Well, I'll find out later.
This is true. Or she shows up on the chat room. So again, an interesting thing to see. You know, advertising certainly not dead. It'll be interesting to see how this moves forward. Okay, who put this MakerBot story up?
I did.
I read this and I was kind of shocked about this. Actually, it's kind of a shame if they do.
I'm not really shocked at all, to be honest.
Well, go ahead and give us a quick summary.
Basically, the summary is that MakerBot's come out with a new version of the MakerBot. It's a 3D printing. It's a 3D printing device that allows you to do rapid prototyping, things like that. It's been kind of a hackery thing, and it's also been a very big open source project where people can add stuff to it and take away stuff.
Yeah, and we have one here in the Unlab, for example.
And the latest model that they've come out with, they're not releasing to open source.
Interesting.
Reps from the company commented and said, yes, the latest model won't be open source, which I'm not totally against.
Now is this because of this? Because there's a company out of China doing a knockoff one. I read that in the article. Because you know, you're going from something that's a couple of grand to $600 or $700 out of China, and I guess is the concern here maybe that their ideas are being quote unquote stolen, even though they're open source.
No, I think the concern is if they want to be a company, they need to have some control over what they're making.
Right. And we're seeing the 3D printers are just about to hit the mainstream.
Exactly.
More and
I think if they want to be a successful company and not just say, oh, open source, and then have somebody else say, oh, look, all MakerBot's plans are open source. Well, let's just take that and sell it ourselves.
Right.
Sweet. We can make money off of another group.
Exactly. And it's like the way Linux works right now, where I imagine they will have some basic thing that will be open source, but then the MakerBot things excel. On top of that will be closed source.
Yeah, because I've seen some closed source MakerBots. The thing is, some of them I haven't been too impressed because, for example, the plastic.
Well, they're not MakerBots. They're 3D printers.
They're 3D printers.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, big difference.
And, you know, you get your plastic in a cartridge, which is very expensive. Again, they're going like just like the inkjet model. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. As I said, we have a MakerBot here. We're currently getting it upgraded, and we're looking at actually buying a second one. We're going to look at doing some fundraising too at the Unlab. So that'll be interesting to see as well. Okay, I want to have a brief break here, talk about our good friends at Orpheum. Orpheum, the web host that saved John's marriage, which we often say. Wedding. Well, marriage, wedding. Well, yeah, if you didn't have the wedding, the marriage would kind of suck.
Well, yeah, that's exactly.
You know, exactly. So let's just briefly talk about some other things Orpheum does. Did you know, Jameson, that Orpheum also does voiceover IP?
No.
They do.
Say
it ain't so. It truly is. If you are a small business, for example.
And so kind of like me.
Kind of like you. And let's say you want to have a business line. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the problem is in the old days, you'd call up Ma Bell and you'd say, hi, I'm a business. And they'd say, okay, bend over. And, you know, they would charge you a hell of a lot of money.
We'll take your money and more.
And more and all that. So these days, though, thanks to PBX and stuff like that, they have a couple of different solutions. So, for example, if you're a very small business, maybe you just need, you know, two lines or three lines. They have something called Business iVoice. It's basically a trunk system. Mm-hmm. So what can happen is you can get two concurrent calls, unlimited faxes, unlimited long distance to Canada and the U.S. Other places, if you want to have a toll-free line, let's say, for your customers to call in. Mm-hmm. It's 2.5 cents a minute, which is very, very good. And you can get that for $50 per month right now. So that's two lines.
What?
Yep, roughly $25 a month. So that's one example of what they do. The other thing they do is the equivalent of the old PBX system. Mm-hmm. Where you used to have a box in your phone room. Anytime you wanted a line change, you'd have to call up Ma Bell. The tech would come in. You know, charge you a small fortune, stuff like that. Well, they can also do that for you virtually. So, for example, let's say you have four staff. You need four numbers. Again, four numbers or extensions, unlimited calls, unlimited faxes, long distance, unlimited to Canada and the U.S., same 2.5 cent a minute toll-free cost. You can use your own phones or theirs, all that for $95 a month. Exactly. It starts with one line at 25, and the savings increase the more
lines
you do.
The more you need.
For example, the 8-line one is $190, 15 is $360 a month, and again, the same excellent service you get from Derek, as you do for the hosting and stuff like that. Exactly. Exactly, as we all know. So definitely give them a try. Tell them the Canadian Tech Podcast sent you, and we thank them for their support. Mm-hmm. Okay, moving on. We have a little bit of I call it the Cold War. Ottawa casts wary eye on Chinese telecom giant. Anyone have a comment on this? This is basically a state-owned Chinese firms are looking at moving in, starting to buy some more either Canadian companies, or what's happening is there's a lot of our major wireless firms, including Bell and Telus, SaskTel, Wind Mobile, they're buying components and parts from this company in China. And the concern is there a backdoor to allow Chinese intelligence, you know, that sort of thing that can potentially tap in? And is that a concern?
Do we really care anymore?
Yeah, we do, actually.
Yeah, that's a huge, huge problem.
Yeah, because, you know, again, being a child of the Cold War, we used to worry about that with the Russians. But no, it is actually a big concern, especially because there's a lot of companies, if you go to China, they will actually say, do not take your own phone. Here is a burner phone. Yeah. Because it's a big concern over there.
Well, when I was in China, it's like the Great Firewall of China is.
Well, I know that.
And it's also because.
They poison your searches. They will do tons of things.
And they will tap
in. It has been proven that there are some Huawei devices that they found compromised networking. That's why Cisco is so big, is because people don't want to buy the Chinese ones because it's not safe.
Fair enough.
And it's like if they have all your money already and. Now they have all your information.
But you would think that companies like Cisco and things like that, you know, if we know about that and that happening, then from the standpoint of the security, and I know they rigorously test things anyways, we'd be aware of that, you know, if the chips were poisoned.
Not
if like
you're... It's your devices that are poisoned.
You would think they'd be checking that anyways.
No, but if you're it's a very different, because you're going in from like a core network. It's not like the plug into the wall like what we have at home. It's you're going in through a core networking service. You're going to have your core routers, your edge routers, things like that are going to have it. And it's going to be phoning home, and it's built by the company. If Cisco wanted to do it, they could do it, and nobody would be the wiser because they've got so
and it's
much.
Not like, well, it's not like our government. It's not like the CRTC is actively testing this stuff.
Yeah,
it kind of brings back to the old thing. You know, we talk about we're in a global village now, but there's certain things that, you know, in terms of you ask anyone in the intelligence agencies, we should still be building at home. You know, and this is, you know, it's well known back in the Cold War, the U.S. purposely would. You know, give the Soviet Union faulty technology or stuff with backdoors with the NSA and stuff like that. And that was, you know, that was a big deal. Where now it's happening the other way around yet. So,
but my question is, for the average consumer, how much is going to influence?
This is not the average.
This is the big telcos.
It's not an average consumer.
But it can stream down and affect you. Because let's say I'm in a business that's highly competitive to a company in China.
Aren't we all?
But it depends on the business.
The fears here, though, aren't with businesses. It's military. It's Huawei is started by a former member of the People's Republic of China's army. And there's been no – and they're primarily dealing to governments.
And we're not the only one concerned. Australia actually recently banned this – and I can never pronounce the names. My apologies.
Huawei.
Australian unit from bidding on a fairly large broadband network project, citing the need to protect national interests. So, you know, we're not the only ones worried about it. The U.S. are also concerned too. But, again,
the U.S. were refusing to purchase any products from Huawei for any of their government – It's a valid concern when you come to
– when you see the past history.
See that Huawei has done it in the past, that they've found backdoors throughout their routers, throughout their switches, things like that. When they've done it in the past, it makes sense that you'd be wary of it.
Because it's just like, for example, let's say tomorrow China decided to impose a trade blockade on everything that's made in China that we ship here. That would really affect our national economy.
Yeah. Oh, it would. It would decimate
But that's the concern, is we have so much. And, again, it's kind of a shame we've lost companies, you know, who previously would do that, Northern Telecom and stuff like that. So, again, it's an interesting story, and it's interesting to see. Obviously, Harper and his government, you know, they're concerned about it too. And I think it's a valid point because, you know what, even if I was China, I don't see China buying Cisco products. Probably for the same reason.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same old game.
I don't know. I guess I'm too much of an optimist, and I'd like to think that we're moving towards a world where things like that really don't matter.
Yeah,
but
it's got a way to go. I'm afraid. I'm afraid it's got a way to go yet.
I'll just continue being an optimist. And
that's cool. That's cool.
We'll see where I end up. And
first up against the wall. No, yeah. Just kidding. Okay, this next story I saw, and I kind of ignored it because it's kind of reminded me of one a couple of weeks ago. But so go ahead, someone can talk about this.
Yeah, I saw this one too, and I don't really buy it because there is a lot of support for tech industries. Contagion actually was started by my current CEO Albert Lai,
right?
So I'm a little bit biased there, but there's a lot of tax incentives and things along that for tech companies to start up in Southwestern Ontario right yep. now. I don't see the huge, like, they kind of made the article sound like people are not going to Silicon Valley. They're going to Canada instead.
It was a very poorly written article,
but there is true. That's the reason Big Viking Games is in London is because of it's a great climate to build a new tech company. The government's extremely supportive. There's a lot of talent here that's been in the past. Albert's actually a really good person to talk to because he's really big on this. Because when he's starting it out, Canada's always been kind of a studio for American companies. So right. they would get a lot of talent here. The artists would hear. They'd outsource a lot of stuff here. But the major money would be going back to the States. So a lot of the time now, people are starting to be like, hey, well, we can go into Canada. And the government is paying it back.
Why send the money elsewhere when you can keep it here?
Exactly. I think one of the more important things, and we don't often see it addressed, and it's just like in trades these days, the companies, a lot of cases, are shooting themselves in the foot. Just like with the apprenticeship programs and trades and that, you're still not seeing – you're seeing a lot of jobs, people saying, oh, we need these jobs. We need people. We're short. But they're asking for, you know, 5 to 10 years of experience. It's mm-hmm. very tough as a recent graduate to get your foot in the door.
It's very tough to get 5 to 10 years experience if you've just graduated college or university.
You know, and it's the same thing in the trades. You find a lot of companies aren't hiring apprentices. And then they have the case of, you know, their older workers are retiring. Well, if the apprentices can't do their skills, then they can't continue and they move to something else. And I'm noticing it the same thing, with jobs here. Everything's requiring, you know, there's one or two places that I've seen lately around town that are looking for junior positions. But mm-hmm. you don't really have a lot of entry level for a large number of people coming out of college and school.
A lot of the case for that, though, is because there are so many people coming out. There's really not much that sets you apart from being. Right. So what you do is while you're in school, you work. Mm-hmm. You volunteer, so you mm-hmm. do get those 5 years.
It's just funny how a lot of cases, and I think part of it too is HR sometimes artificially raises the bar. I always remember years ago.
You want to turn off people. If people don't think they're qualified for the job.
But you've also got to be careful. I remember years ago when Java was about 2 years old, I saw several job postings for people saying we require 5 years of Java experience.
Yeah.
And you know that's HR not having a clue.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I think they raise the bar so high. It's an interesting thing to see. And then because it kind of annoys me in a way, they're saying, oh, we need to have more visas for people to come in to do this work, where I think a lot of the times they've just raised the bar so much. And guess what? Years ago, you learned on the job.
Where I also disagree with that, though, is that if you are not applying for a job because the job position says it requires more skills than you have, you're probably not the person they're looking for the job. Because when I was applying for a job, or people reading through resumes,
yep.
it doesn't matter if you don't have all the skills. If you're somebody that's thinking like, oh, I don't have all these skills, so I'm not going to apply for the job. It's you don't have the drive to actually try for the job.
Well, I think it's also I think it's also
I don't have this certificate, this certificate. This
I think it also depends how large the firm is and whatnot. If you've got an HR department, let's say, that doesn't quite know how to deal with that. Like, different firms are different, right? Like,
yeah.
in my company, our manager was directly involved. HR was involved, but the manager had the last say,
yeah.
shall we say. So he often got to look at a larger pool of candidates than the ones HR are just pulling off in there
based on the stuff on the resume. For a job posting, like, the rule is you make the requirements a lot more stricter than they actually are
yeah.
just mm-hmm. to turn off the people yep. that are going to just throw resumes yep. with yep. their forklift license. And
Yeah, exactly. But as I said, I think it's just an interesting thing how you've got an awful lot of companies saying we don't have the skill sets. And again, we see it in the trades.
Do you think it's a position where jobs need to be reaching out to education areas that, you know, like Fanshawe and Western here in town and say, we want X number of co-ops for X number of months?
I think there needs to be a combination. If you look at the trade side, and it's a little bit different because you've got the apprentice programs and stuff like that. In that side, companies aren't hiring apprentices at all, okay, because they're saying times are tough or we can't afford or we don't want to train. They don't want to spend the time and the train. The problem is they're shooting themselves in the foot because down the road when their existing guys and girls are hitting retirement, where this pool of apprentices, if you can't get your apprentices, you can't get your paper. You move on to another career.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm kind of worried we're starting to go that way down the road the other way.
On the other side of that, too, the problem is a co-op position is typically for 4 months.
Yeah.
And that is a very short time to get somebody. And, like, the one place where it's good is Waterloo. They've got a great co-op program. At Western, the co-op program is garbage. It's absolutely – I know for, like, it's very rare that you'll hire somebody on a co-op program at Western because the co-op is basically if you failed classes, that's what you do is you do the co-op to make up credits.
Or you need someone – you need just grunt labor.
No, but at Western, but also at the same time, many universities don't see the purpose of university to get a job.
Yeah.
The purpose of university is to get an education.
Yeah, jobs
have nothing to do with it.
Yeah, which is I think an issue as well. And again, we see the differences in the two cultures between Western and Waterloo.
A college is meant to get a job versus a university is meant to get an education. They don't care about if you get a job or not in the most cases.
Right. But again, I think we're seeing a lot of that. So I think it's a combination by all the players. You know, we talk about in London here wanting to retain more young people and stuff like that. And that has to be part of the conversation.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, we're going to continue to see stories like this, and you'll see the inevitable comments on that with things like that. So, okay, what's our next story? Moving on, we have world record internet speeds.
Yeah, it's not really much to talk about this one, but in Japan, they moved a petabyte per second.
That's 1,000 terabytes.
That's 1,000 terabytes.
Oh, that's a lot of porn.
That's a lot of anything. It's equivalent to, I think it's like 50,000 HD movies in a second.
So the Library of Congress, how many times over?
Or 5,000 HD movies. Sorry.
Yeah. Of 2 hours in a single second is possible over 50 kilometers.
Jeez.
Over a single strand of optical fiber.
How many colors did they have in there?
12-core light path. I don't know, you know, but it's bloody quick. And again, I'm sure you'll have the movie industry up in arms.
Yeah, of course.
But you know what? More and more, you know, you look at every year, we're doubling the amount of data, and it's just...
Except for Japan's always had better internet than us.
Well, a smaller country, too.
Yeah, but they've always...
But again, it's interesting to see on how they can do that. Like if you could imagine that sort of speeds, you know, real time disaster recovery update mirroring across two continents, for example, things like that. So you know, there's definite uses for it.
Even just like the backbone paths,
which is what this is for.
You know, from say Montreal to Windsor in the major corridor here, you know, things like that, and being able to transmit and carry that much more bandwidth for people.
Exactly. Truly, amazing. Again, it's always interesting to see faster and faster. Again, this comes from a guy whose first modem was 300 baud. So that's going way back before the pair of you were born.
Seen it all.
I know. I'm the old curmudgeon. So
no. You're the old experienced one.
I'm the old experienced one. Oh, you are bucking for a promotion, aren't you? Okay. Reading and writing quantum bits. We just like using that word quantum, don't we, John?
It just sounds like the future.
It sounds like the future.
Quantum leap.
So who posted this story? It wasn't me. I'm not that clever.
Yeah, I know. That was me.
On a single electron spin.
When I see an empty docket for stories, I tend to try and find stuff.
So you want to briefly summarize this on this?
Well, basically, you know how there's a problem with reading quantum bits and, you know, you can know the position and
I did not know that, but okay, I'll take your word for it.
Well, it, you know, has to do with the whole Heisenberg uncertainty principle stuff.
All right.
You can only know so much without knowing other things. I was reading through this, and basically they were saying that they finally figured out ways to actually measure the measure the spin on an electron. And so, you know, you can actually figure out whether it's up or down. And, you know, with one electron, there's not a whole heck of a lot you can do, but it's at least a step in the right direction to stringing towards multiple qubits or multiple, you know, multiple bits of data in the quantum field.
So we're basically going to be looking at faster machines, more compact data.
Yeah, I think it also, I had a good discussion with a friend of mine about, you know, what quantum computers actually entail and what they're good for. And he was saying that it's not necessarily about always faster computation,
okay,
but it's about things like a truly unbreakable encryption and, you know, having two qubits and having them quantum entangled is a lot different than having a 256 AES string that could theoretically be broken given enough processing power.
Right.
You know, there's a lot that can be done with quantum computing and encryption that just is physically unbreakable,
right,
due to the nature of the principles that go along with it.
And I guess it shows too, we're always looking at, if you look at 20 years ago, where we imagined where we'd be today. And again, it's kind of neat to see a little bit look at the future. And the word quantum, I like quantum torpedoes, but that's Star Trek.
The most impressive part is that they're dealing with
photon?
Well, they'll say quantum torpedoes.
Quantum.
They were the next stage from photons.
Yeah. They were the big thing about this story was that they were dealing with a single atom, and so they had a single atom of phosphorus in a silicon tray, and so you're talking about, you know, smaller than any of the processors we're currently dealing with,
right,
on the nanoscale. So you're dealing with incredibly small amounts
and
super cooled obviously, because you have to,
strong magnetic fields,
but you're still dealing with a single electron.
Amazing. Yeah, it's amazing when you think about that. You know, exactly. So, yeah. So, again, who knows what this is going to mean in the future. We'll be able to have a computer in our eye or something. Stuff like that. We still haven't got my flying cars, though. But that's
I don't want flying cars.
I know.
Ever.
You already say that.
There's too many accidents with regular cars.
I know.
Well, people are dumb enough and terrible enough on two axes. If you add a third, it's just going to be chaos.
Driverless cars, indeed.
Driverless flying cars I can get behind.
Yeah, there we go.
So we just need Google to pioneer not only the driverless. Well, I mean, they're working on the driverless car, so they just need to add in the third dimension. We're
golden. And then they will truly become Skynet, and then we're screwed. Okay, our last story here. W3C announces plans to deliver HTML5 by 2014. HTML 5.1 by 2016. As a iPhone user, I'll be glad when I see more and more HTML5 to get rid of Flash, which will be very
nice.
Well,
HTML5 is a bit more than just
I know, but that's what I that's what that's a what lot people, of people yes, see.
It isn't really an exciting story.
No,
to be
but
honest.
It's
one of those things that's
it's behind the scenes, but without
it's behind the scenes,
without
yeah.
it,
but there's not
the
really much
run.
To talk about, because for the most case, HTML5 is already here. It's just not been ratified, like,
but it is nice to see an official sort of deadline for when it's going to be.
But again, it's with the coding standard, like W3C, like, it doesn't really mean anything when they do it, because they could say, like, oh, we're going to do it by 2012. Like, I think,
and
I don't
Microsoft
know if HTML,
will promptly ignore it.
I don't know if HTML4 was ever actually ratified.
Yeah.
Okay.
But everyone uses it.
Yeah.
But so, it was just one of those things. Like,
I still remember HTML1 and all that, and then HTML2 came out, and a lot of the old school guys were like, no. But, you know, change is inevitable.
Mm-hmm. But if you take a look at some of the stuff that's coming out with HTML5 and, you know, CSS3 that goes sort of along with it, I was taking a look at, and this is, I was taking, it was either yesterday or the day before, someone shared a link, and it was for Cirque du Soleil. And
right.
they've got a new website out for something or other, and it's unbelievable. It's build is being for Chrome only, just due to the WebGL stuff. But even in Safari, it was phenomenal, just the way that they were using all the different things, and there being, you know, no Flash there. It was all web driven.
Yeah, it actually reminds me, there was a thing, I think it was for Chrome, and they did a showcase of like 500 HTML5 sites. They did like a contest, and we should find it for the show notes, because that was impressive, some of the things you could do in there, all using HTML5 instead of Flash. Okay, so before we go to our picks of the day, does anyone else have any other last announcements? I do. the Unlab for this weekend here, right here in the studio. Doors Open London and Culture Days is on. So Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 10 till 4. One of our members, Devin Elliott, is going to be hosting it. So if any of you want to see where we record and where all the magic happens, come on down. I won't be here on the weekend. I've got a wedding I'm going to be going to, but I'll probably be here Friday for a while. If people want to come by and see that. Anything else upcoming? Anyone else have anything to plug? John, has your title changed again at Big Viking Games?
Nope, still John.
Still John?
Still just John?
See, now he's a permanent. It doesn't change every week.
Well, yeah. Now that you're permanent, things have gotten boring.
And what else is happening at Blacklight?
Not too much right now. Just working away on stuff. I'm trying to type a few things and...
Okay.
I finished last week. Last week I finished up some stuff for Andrew Burdan for some audio work that will be coming out. It will be coming out later on this fall, so that'll be nice.
Excellent. Okay, that's good to know. We should also point out we're working on our website.
Yes,
having a little bit of revamp. Yeah. You've already done the theme, so we may as well just make you creative director and be done with it.
Hey. You know?
Title of the week. There we go. So, all right.
I've already got a few ideas working out for it.
Excellent. So. Excellent. Okay. Picks of the week. Mine is, I read about this and I was just filled with joy. Many, many years ago, the absolute greatest RPG game for the computer was called Baldur's Gate. And it was truly awesome.
I vaguely remember that.
They had expansions. It was truly amazing. Well, it's coming back, baby. They are going to have it for the Windows PC. They're going to have it for the iPad, the Mac, and Android with a future release date. A lot of new improvements, a lot of new characters, some new adventures. This will be interesting. Apparently some rumor is that you're going to be able to play it on your Windows PC and then stop it, save the game, and then you can continue on your iPad.
So that would be kind of nice.
It'll be interesting to see if you have to buy the separate versions to support that. But they're basically saying, you know, PC, iPad, Mac OS, and Android.
So essentially they're trying to build this like the PlayStation thing where you pause your game and then you go when you're...
I guess so. So, yeah, it's...
Was it Vita?
I believe that's what it was, right. So, yep. No, this is by a company called Overhaul Games, so it'll be interesting to see. Originally, the Windows version was supposed to be out this month, but they've moved it back to November. I guess they want to get it right. But, no, I'm actually really pleased. I've been playing Guild Wars 2 a lot, but I like Baldur's Gate. Baldur's Gate was really fun. It was kind of the same 3D view that Diablo had later on, because Diablo copied that.
Yeah. Age of Empires.
Or Age of Empires or whatever. So, yeah, it's going to be good. So I'm looking forward to seeing that, both the Mac and the Windows clients. This being speaking of Guild Wars 2, Baldur's Gate or Guild Wars 2 has a Mac client now.
Mm-hmm.
I've been playing with it. They still call it beta, but so far I found it really, really good. Very, very stable.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually use the same DAT file.
Really?
Yep, from the Windows one. They have some people have a little thing on how you do it. Mm-hmm. You insert it in the package. Yeah, so that saves you a 17 gig download.
Which would be very nice.
Which is very nice indeed. So,
but
yeah.
it shows you kind of how close the two are getting. So.
Oh, it's more and more. Exactly. So, okay, John.
So there's been a...
You're doing a Marsman. You have several here.
I have two, yes.
Okay.
One, I'm just going to say at midnight or 3 a.m. Eastern time, Mists of Pandaria will be opened for us to go all roll around as pandas in World of Warcraft.
Oh,
so.
Yes, that's right.
I will be doing that at lunchtime tomorrow.
So that'll be you, Denise Spiesen, and a few other well-known...
Oh, there'll be a lot of people playing.
And another 9 million other people
yeah, worldwide.
Yeah, but I know a few of you that you're really into your World of Warcraft. And so, sorry, that's the Mists of Pandaria?
Mists of Pandaria.
Okay.
So the other one that I wanted to talk about is an app that, when the iPhone 5 came out, I just went through and looked up the apps that were updated for the iPhone 5 just to see what was the good ones. And one that I forgot, I hadn't used in ages, and I was like, oh, I forgot that was out for iOS because I use it on the Mac.
It's a great app.
All the time is Sketch.
Yep.
Sketch is the greatest annotation app I can think of. I don't know a better way to describe it than an annotations app, but... Basically, what you can do, it's on the Mac and it's on the iOS now. I believe it's everywhere else because Evernote bought it and they ported it all over the place.
And they've done a great job. And it's
basically
available.
What it does is you have a picture or a map or anything, and then it lets you add arrows, circles, texts, anything to overlay over top. And it's extremely easy to use.
Yep.
So the other day, I was like, wanted like highlight somewhere on a map that somebody could look at. I just grabbed it, put a circle over it, sent off, save the file, sent it off. Like, it was really quick, really easy to do. If you ever want to add titles, words to a picture or anything along those lines, Sketch is the greatest way to do it.
Exactly. No, great, great app. I use it all the time, actually, myself.
I use it on my Mac a lot.
It's I'm a big Evernote guy. Yeah, it's been around for quite a while. I'm a huge Evernote guy.
Yep.
So I love absolutely using it. So yeah, no, those are two excellent choices. Okay, how about yours?
I don't personally use this, but I know that in the Mac world, there are some people that prefer it. Growl 2.0 finally mm-hmm. came out for Mountain Lion, which it will tie into notification center and things like that. I used Growl a long time ago, and I did find it useful. And you know,
I haven't. It was recommended to me, I believe, by Mr. Pylon here.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So 2.0 is out, which means that it will hopefully work a little bit nicer with Notification Center.
And, yeah. I do like it.
Integrate better.
Yeah.
So.
It's very nice for, you know, things like if my backup doesn't work correctly or something like that, it pops it up. And yeah, I do. I haven't really gone into it a lot yet.
The best part about the 2.0 release is it has Prowl integrated with it now.
Yes.
And Prowl is an awesome app for the iPhone or iOS that basically will let you remotely send Growl updates to your phone. So I have it set for whenever anything happens on my iMac at home, which works as a server. Anytime there's an alert or something comes up, it goes to my phone right away, so I know if I'm away from my computer. If I'm not away from my computer, it doesn't show up.
Right. Mm-hmm. Cool. So that, yeah, no, that's an excellent idea. All sorts of different things you can do there. So, all right. So that sounds good. So yeah, another busy week. We'll be back again next Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, that's what we're gonna keep doing. At some point, we might change the day, but we'll see how that goes. So for September the 24th for the Canadian Tech Podcast, my name is Stuart Clark.
I'm John Pylon.
I'm James Roberts.
Thank you, and be well.